The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and Wynn Carpenter. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Okay, I think. I'm kind of awake. Oh. Kind of not.
Yeah, it's a little early for somebody your age.
Yeah, you can blame the gas prices on me when I retired. Everything doubled.
Yeah, exactly.
We're here with Liam, our producer. How are you, buddy?
I'm just hanging out.
You cool. You all say that. So.
Yeah.
Okay, do I have Frankie?
I always am.
So Frankie's out there to come wake you up.
Yeah, he is.
And he'll do it, man. He'll crack the whip.
He will.
So you're listening to Jefferson State of Mine, M-I-N-E. We're broadcasting live from downtown Reading, KCNR Studios, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, on 1460 AM, your talk radio. You can also listen to us. We are streaming live on KCNR1460.com worldwide, and we archive forever and ever and ever. And ever. And usually I get some singing from my partner, but he's got all kinds of fun things he's doing there.
No, 10 years in the waiting there, right? With archives?
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So you can go back and listen for 10 years worth of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We're here today with Max Diner. Max is running for Congress. He's running for District 1. He's running against Doug LaMalfa, the incumbent, and he's running as a Democrat. How are you, Max?
I'm very well. Terry, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
And Wynn. I guess I should give credit to Wynn.
All right.
Yeah, we try to include him.
Right. We're a very inclusive party, right, the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so Max, tell us a little something about yourself.
Yeah, so I am the Democratic candidate. So I was second in the primary. We'll be on your ballot in November. My background, I was born in Sacramento. I live in Chico now. My brother lives in Reading. He actually lost his house in car fire. So, that's kind of a bummer. But, I guess my professional background is, after high school, I joined the Army. I did 4 years in active duty, two of which were in Iraq. So I was 11 Bravo there. Saw a little bit of combat, nothing crazy. I got my CIB, got out, joined the reserves, so I'm a first sergeant in a civil affairs unit. It's kind of like the Army's version of the UN, where the UN dare not tread. And then I went to college, so I graduated there, joined the Foreign Service. I was a diplomat. I was an ag officer in Honduras, basically helping U.S. Producers sell into Honduras, and then making sure that Honduran agricultural exports were safe, and then some reporting and other stuff. But and then in Tijuana, I was a visa officer in the arrest portfolio, because a lot of Americans get arrested in Tijuana. The Second Amendment does not apply in Mexico. That is constantly tripping people up. And then I went to Egypt. I was a peacekeeper there, so part of the Camp David Accords, peace between Egypt and Israel. The Sinai Peninsula, very contested, so we have a peacekeeping mission that still happens. And a lot of people don't realize that, diplomacy doesn't end with a fancy signature on a page and a lot of cameras. Mm-hmm. We still have a battalion minus, so about 450 troops there. We just lost a helicopter 2 years ago that killed 9 people, of which 5 were American. Peace is something that keeps going. That really was, our big win in the Middle East. If you're thinking about, what have we done in the Middle East that's really worked in the past 50 years? It's probably just the Camp David Accords. I guess first Gulf War. We did okay with that. So I did that, and then I went back to Washington. I was working on food security. So where do we send our agricultural aid? It's kind of a big three-part test, just to give you guys some background. So USDA buys a lot of farm products, basically corn, soybeans. And then it's like, hey, where do you guys want me to ship this? Because we got a lot of extra calories. We just want to get rid of it. And then USAID has a bunch of, like, really idealistic, very intelligent people. They're like, I can feed this many kids here. I've got these partners right up here. And then State Department, we're kind of the grumps. We're like, well, we're really concerned about aid diversion here, right? Like, there's this terrorist group here. We're worried that you send food there, they're going to just use it. So we're going to send this food over to country B instead. So we kind of, you know, dampen everyone's happy parade. But I left that. My wife, by that time, was making twice my government salary. So I went to work at RAND here in California.
Where at?
RAND. It's a defense think tank.
Oh.
So I was working on defense and diplomacy issues, basically looking at Eastern Europe and the Western Pacific, so China and Russia, and kind of like the intersection of defense and diplomacy, right? So like a pacing threat would be, hey, if there's a war between China and Taiwan, how can the U.S., increase the likelihood that third country nations like, you know, Vietnam would join that conflict, right? Would apply pressure against China on our behalf. What kind of programs can we implement now? What kind of contingency plans can we make now to increase the likelihood that that occurs? Because obviously the more friends you have in a fight, the better you do, right?
And this is still the job you currently
have? No, so RAND is a defense think tank, and they're okay. You're running for Congress. This is very partisan. We would prefer you just take a leave of absence. And I was like, that's fine. So I took a leave of absence from the end of last year. And if I win, great. Like, I'll stay on leave of absence. And if I lose, well, then I'll probably just go back to RAND. So it's remote now.
Okay, fine. There's probably, and I know Wynn's got some questions over here too, but I have one really quick. Actually, there's three things. What's the number one thing you see with the jurisdiction you would have as a congressman that you would want to see happen?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is forestry. Forest management, it's been going terribly for the past 30 years, right? We had this huge shift, kind of the pendulum swung from clear cutting to no cutting, and we need to take it back to the middle. We need to do sustainable forest management.
What does that mean?
That means you thin, right? Like aggressive thinning, cut down a lot of trees.
Would we be aggressive?
Yeah, well, you have to be. Our forests are incredibly overgrown.
Okay.
We have a cultural problem in the land management agencies. That's U.S. Forest Service, BLM. We have a kind of a legal problem with NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act, that just kind of has crippled these agencies and also allowed radical environmental groups to sue whenever you have a timber management plan or
something. Who would you classify as a radical environmental group?
The John Muir Institute, right? Chad Johnson. Oh my God, is that his name? Anyway, Chad Hansen. I'm sorry. He's down at UC Davis. He's kind of a guy that's like, hey, if you're making money out of trees, like, you're wrong. You're an evil person. And frankly, that's wrong. It's not backed by science. Every forestry PhD worth his salt, you know, can tell you that you are going to have to manage a forest, right? Like, this isn't something you can just live and let live.
Every logger that has ever lived in the industry, exactly. Any person that lives in the North State knows you have to manage that. So you don't have to have a PhD to quantify that.
Right. That's true. I'm just trying to say, like, you know, this guy presents, this Chad Hansen guy presents, is like, hey, I've got a PhD. I know what I'm doing. And it's like, yeah, but you're the exception. You know, you can always find a PhD in any field to say something contrarian, right? There will always
and
be
so
that
why
1%.
Why do we listen to them?
Well, because 99% of the guys that are saying, like, hey, you're going to have to cut down a lot of trees, and this is the way you do it, and these are the you know, kind of like the basal, basically the amount of biomass per acre that you want, or the size of the tree that you want to be focusing on cutting. Like, those people, like, they do a lot of studies. They look at this, you know, across vast distance, you know, across a lot of different acreages, across a lot of different temperature bands. You know, there's value in science. There's value in studying these things. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of value in ground truthing, absolutely. I mean, we can look at it like, you know, so just to kind of change the topic, right? Like, I was in Iraq. I knew Iraq was going to be a disaster as soon as we left, and I was constantly hearing experts in D.C. and watching generals testify to Congress on AFN, Armed Forces Network. It's kind of like our CNN when you're deployed. And they were saying, like, oh, no, we're great. Give me another, you know, 100,000 troops for another year and another $1 billion, and we're going to make Iraq work. And I heard the same thing in Afghanistan, though I didn't do anything in Afghanistan. But, you know, I was not surprised at all after 2 years in Iraq that a year after we left, ISIS swept across northern Iraq, barely firing a shot. I wasn't surprised at all that Afghanistan, you know, basically 2 months after we left, you know, Al-Qaeda was back. Not Al-Qaeda, I'm sorry, the Taliban was back. So you're absolutely right that there's like a time and a place for experts. But, you know, just because experts aren't always right doesn't mean you shouldn't ever listen to them.
Well, that's true.
But if we put more credence in what they're saying than what people are actually doing, the reason I question that is because I grew up in a logging family, you know, generational. And so I've seen it. I understand it. And family members all over the place. And I grew up in a small community. And it directly affected what happened there as far as, you know, the spotted owl, which never was a real threat, ever. And people that say it is have absolutely no idea, because do you know how they track a spotted owl? Do you know how they track a spotted owl?
I mean, you go out and call it, and some are radio tagged.
Yeah, you go out and call it, and then you keep on going down the road or whatever.
Yards,
yeah, and call again and call again. Well, you could be chasing the same damn owl going through the woods. It's not like you're finding all these owls out there. You're going down through following the same owl, and that was noted by a lot of people out there that have worked in the industry for years. And, you know, these good old boys that have been out there forever, they're not going to hurt the environment. They don't want to hurt the environment because they know what it's all about. They're being good stewards or being good farmers of the environment. And so that's where I kind of come at it from, because I understand how it affected families generationally. It has affected a lot of people here in the North State. Pick a county. Doesn't matter. Pick a county.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm with you, Wayne.
Like, all in District 1.
All in District 1. But, I mean, it's not just something like we can say, like, oh, well, there's probably not that many owls. We can look at the outcomes of bad management, right? In 1990, there was a shift to no cutting.
Well, it's all the fires.
All the fires. And now we've lost 35% of Northern California federal land, like federal forests, right? 35% of our
federally
forests are burned.
Federally managed land.
Yeah, and that's
owned by the federally mismanaged.
Yeah, and that is a problem, right? You can say, hey, we had this policy objective, we were going to save owls, and then you can look at this, oh, man, our policy has led to a 35% burn rate in a decade. Obviously, it's a shit policy, right?
Yeah.
And it needs to change.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like, the science backs that. The local communities back that. The foresters I talk to, you know, whether they're registered foresters or not, you know, they back that. There's a lot of people that understand that what we've done, this shift over the last 30 years, basically from the late 80s, you know, early 90s, when Northern Spotted Owl really hit northern communities hard, and then they were the double whammy of NAFTA, basically Canadian cheap lumber imports from Canada. You know, they have decimated our lumber industry here. Mm-hmm. And that has been a disaster environmentally, it's been a disaster economically, and it's been a disaster culturally.
Well, it seems as if your party, though, the party you represent, and a couple questions here, the party you represent is almost diametrically opposed to where you're coming from. And that's what we've heard from a lot of people. We do talk to different senators and we talk to congressmen. And that's a little confusing to me. One issue that we run into a lot of times is when we interview candidates, A, their jurisdiction, they're not sure of that. And B, the other part of it is that it sounds good until they get elected, then they're going with party line. So I guess there's two questions I have for you. The first one is that I believe that on your commercial, and I may have heard this wrong, so tell me if I did, that you want to make Roe versus Wade the law of the land. Okay, now tell me why you would want to do that, number one. And number two, where did you ever find the jurisdiction to do that as an elected congressman? How would you ever have the jurisdiction to even bring, other than a platitude, how would you do that?
Yeah, so number one, well, I'll address number two first, actually, because it's easier. So Congress can pass a nationwide law saying at which level abortion must be legal.
No, right? They can't. No, they don't have jurisdiction.
They can.
No, they can't, because the problem is that the states have the power on that.
They don't, though, Terry.
Tell me in the Constitution where they don't.
Yeah, it's federal preemption, right? So the feds can lie.
What is that? Where's that at?
Basically, the feds can say, hey, like, under Section 8, we can say, like, this is an interstate commerce.
We're in Section 8.
Interstate commerce, right? So, like, interstate commerce clause is very broadly interpreted. That's how you regulate everything from the minimum drinking age.
I understand that.
So the federal government just
so that would qualify as interstate commerce?
Correct. I mean, like, a lot of people
abortion
travel.
Qualifies as interstate commerce.
It isn't commerce.
Well, you could be sending abortion medicine interstate. You could tie that to health grants.
That doesn't matter. You wouldn't have to send it because when Roe versus Wade was overturned, and see, this is the problem we run into with a lot of people running for federal office.
Any office.
That we find that the jurisdiction they don't understand. See, what you're saying is something that doesn't...
Terry, I've talked to lawyers.
Let me land the plane. Okay, so the thing is that basically when you talk about what happened in the Supreme Court, when the Constitution was made, it was made by a compact, which is a contract between legal and legitimate governments. when Jefferson talked about the state of Virginia, it was likened to the state of Spain, France, and Great Britain. A state is a country. The 13 countries got together. They formed the Constitution. The federal government is the creation of the states. It's not the, there isn't a contract or a compact between the states and the federal government. When Roe versus Wade was put in the position of saying it goes back to the states, which it rightly does. Now, if you're running for state senate and you're saying, hey, I think we should have Roe versus Wade, but you can't take something and make it the complete law of the land by using a commerce clause to regulate whether or not people have to pay for something that they may believe is illegal, immoral, or anything else. There is no jurisdiction. And that's the issue we run into, is we get people get mixed up on stuff as far as understanding how in the world you can take something and put it into the context of saying the federal government has the power to do this when they do not. Remember, they're the creation of the states.
So, have you landed the plane?
No,
great.
Go for it.
So I'm not going to rush onto your plane like a bunch of, SWAT team members hopping onto a hijacked plane. So, that's not true, right? So we have a broad definition of the federal government now. What you said may have been the ideal, in the late 18th century, right, when the Constitution was founded. You probably wouldn't have seen a nationwide abortion ban back then. You absolutely can now, right? So it's absolutely legal. There was a proposal in the House to greatly expand.
The states have the jurisdiction.
They don't.
California
does now, because the recent Supreme Court is that there is
then,
no federal law.
Then they do then.
They do then.
Then
so
they do.
Either do or
no.
They don't.
They do now. But because the U.S. Supreme Court has said that this is a state's issue for now.
Right.
I am proposing that we make viability the cutoff. Doug LaMalfa is proposing a similar law that will say fertilization is life. Any abortion at any point will be murder, and any use of the day after pill will be murder. And he is using the same section of the Constitution to do that.
Which I still think is a platitude. I don't agree with him either.
Right. Well, I'm just saying he's co-sponsoring a bill. Like, these bills absolutely exist. I'm not making this up, right? Like,
I understand.
Right. So,
and I agree with you. I'm just saying that it's not your jurisdiction.
Oh.
And it's not the federal government's jurisdiction. It's not Doug LaMalfa's jurisdiction either, as the federal government.
So I think we're going to have to agree to disagree here, right? Like, you have a very narrow interpretation of federal government power, and that's fine. Like, that's a very constitutionalist. It's a very, I want you to just realize
the Supreme Court agrees with what I said.
No, the Supreme Court says that there isn't a constitutional reason to protect abortion.
It goes
but
back
it's not,
to the states.
But they're not saying that this is a state's preeminence issue. They're just saying that the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision was poorly decided, that it didn't have a constitutional
sense. That's not what they said. They gave it back to the states.
Right.
That's why
that was the function, was giving it back to
the
states.
See, that's
but
the thing.
It's because
it
there's
is
no
or
federal
isn't.
Law.
That's my point. It either is or it isn't. There isn't a gray area. Now, as far as running in District 1, my question would be, as a Democrat, and even though I believe that you have good views, so I'm not saying that. But as a Democrat, if 99% of the Republicans disagree with what your party's doing, I'm not saying that they disagree with what's going on with the pricing, overreach of government, what the FBI is doing, how the IRS is being used, all these different things have happened with the Democrats in power. Why? And what would be the reasoning for them to change their mind and say, I'm going to vote for a Democrat? Unless, are you willing to vote against your party?
Yeah, I think, I'm going to be a representative for District 1. I'm not going to be a Democratic, drone. It's very easy to say, like, oh, everyone Democrats just going to carbon copy Nancy Pelosi. I don't like Nancy Pelosi. I don't think she should be Speaker. I think she's too old. I think she's corrupt. You look at her stock trading ban. Like her resistance, I'm sorry, to having a stock trading ban. You look at how much money her family has made in her 40 years in office. I think that there's a lot wrong with the Democratic Party. And I'm not going to come up here and say, like, oh, no, my party's, peaches and cream. But we have a lot wrong with Doug LaMalfa, right? Doug LaMalfa is not delivering for this district. Doug LaMalfa has proposed a lot of legislation that has gone nowhere. And I will bring to this district a moderate who can go to Sacramento and work with Democrats there and speak their language, and say, like, hey, we need changes in forestry. We need changes in water.
What do you mean you'd be going to Sacramento? You wouldn't be going to Sacramento.
No, I'd be going to D.C., but you need to
be going to D.C.
Buying.
Well, I know. Yeah. Well, the point is you're not going to Sacramento. Yeah.
A lot of my time, a lot of good federal representative time in a state where you need to get state buy-in. You know, we want to get sites reservoir built. I want to raise Shasta Dam. I want to do a lot more logging on timber, you know, and this timber, you know, we have problems in the federal lands, and that's obviously the bigger problem. There's a lot of problems on state land too. And especially if you're going to be doing something like regularizing, kind of correcting the checkerboard pattern right now, you'll need to get state level buy-in, right? Like, this is part of the issues that people are like, oh, you're going to DC, you're only doing DC stuff. It's like, well, part of the reason that federal policy does not work well in Northern California is that we don't have a good representative in Sacramento either. And we need to get someone that can get all of those people together. You know, we need to tie in federal government, state government, local, basically interested parties like NGOs, and local, you know, communities. And these are the people that you need to get together, get on a table, and hash out a solution. Because if we can't build any infrastructure in California without state-level buy-in, right? Like, you're right. It's clearer on water than it is on forest. The feds can push through something on forest and kind of make it work. But, you know, a private mill, and we do want to increase mills. You know, like, we want to restart the mill industry. We want to get people moved up here so they can work on lumber again. You'll need to get state programs in for that.
Why would you need state programs when the largest mill and largest timber holder lives here locally in Redding?
Yeah, SBI. Yeah, so I mean, but SBI
would you need state involvement with that?
Because SBI is having huge problems in getting qualified people to work, right? And if you want to increase timber, if you want to increase the amount of trees you log per year by a factor of 3 or 4, you will need state programs to move those people up, to get those people trained, and to support them with, you know, state services.
But you have no jurisdiction over the state programs.
No, and this isn't, this,
see,
is what,
this is what we run into all the time. We have people come in, they talk about something, they talk about platitudes. It's just like, you know, we've had people come in here and say, you know, California needs voter ID, and they're running for Senate of the United States. I mean, the point is that there's a lot of good views you have, but the real question is, you know, number one with the Roe versus Wade thing, the jurisdictions of the state, that period. That I don't care what you say, there's no commerce clause involved in that, and nothing you can do. And Doug's wrong too. And number two, the second thing is that when it comes to state managing, the federal government isn't in there in state managing. Now, if you want a partnership some way like that, maybe you have a bill you'd want to do that way. But the point is that what we want to hear is what you're going to do about the situation as far as the federal government. That's kind of a word.
Yeah, so I don't mean to be dodging the question, but, you know, a lot of this does require bridge building, right? Like, you shouldn't look at any level of government.
No, but it is dodging the question, because you don't have jurisdiction, and all you're doing, that's a platitude to play to voters. That's the way I see it. But anyway.
I have a question off that stuff that you've been debating, which clearly is not going to get resolved here. What are you going to do to protect the Second Amendment?
Yeah, well, I think we do need, you know, federal regulations to say this is a minimum quality of rifle that you're allowed to buy. You know, and I think the same goes for pistols.
No, I'm talking about Second Amendment.
Yeah, the Second Amendment. Right, yeah, rifles and pistols, right? Yeah. California overregulates both of these weapon types.
But you said we need to have restrictions.
No, I think you should have a minimum standard on the federal government saying, like, hey, you want to have interstate commerce, buy a weapon in Nevada, bring it to California, that's great. California can't ban it. I think it's crazy that California has stricter Second Amendment laws than Nevada. Right, I'm fine with California with a different background check regime or what's a different, you know, red flag law regime. But the fact that you can't buy a legal weapon in one state and bring it to California is a clear violation of Section 8.
And then what about carrying?
Yeah, so carrying, honestly, that's not a federal issue, right? Like, this is absolutely something where Terry agrees. Like, that's something set by mostly by county sheriffs.
No, it's not.
Except by the state.
Except by the state.
The jurisdiction of
the sheriffs don't have the stones to stand up to anybody at the state level.
It's sheriffs that approve these carry permits.
Approve the carry permit.
Oh, I'm sorry. The regulations.
The fact that we have to have a carry permit is what I'm after. Asking for permission our first constitutional right, our second one. We're looking for a constitutional right to be permitted. Why on earth would we... Why would we, as sovereign citizens of this state or this country, allow that to happen?
Yeah.
And as you, as an elected official, what are you going to do to protect that for us?
Well, I'm not – so when we're going to disagree here, right, like I'm pretty basically pro-gun for a Democrat, but I still think you should probably get, you know, approval if you're going to, you know,
from
open
who?
Carry.
See, the thing is,
so I think the sheriff's a good person to go to, right, and say, like, hey, I want a CCW. Hey, I want an open carry permit.
No.
That's permission. That's right.
What I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, and you don't want to get permission. You want to have a weapon and take it out wherever
you want.
Okay. I hear
what I'm saying. Why do we have to have permission to carry other than if you're a felon, you're already in violation. So if you're a felon, especially with a weapon, a gun, then, yeah, there are restrictions for you. But I've never been a felon. Terry's never been a felon. Why can we not just carry a gun?
And just
open carry. Open carry. I'm not talking about concealed. Concealed is with a permit. Concealed carry is a permission slip from the sheriff's office.
Who can give it and take it
away. And they can give it or take it away
right.
or not. And you can.
I'd be even less comfortable with open carry. I mean, I don't think there's
Why
a
not?
Rationale for it. Because I.
Oh, the biggest rationale is a big deterrent. If my daughter, who is 5 foot, is legally able to carry a gun on her hip and she knows how to use it, and if she can drop somebody for who's going to threaten her, then by God, by golly, I want her to be able to do that. So but why would you deny my daughter right. that privilege?
Well, it's a privilege, not a right. You kind of said it right there.
It's a right.
That's a right.
Okay.
The second. Okay.
So I don't mean to bring you out, but there's two major reasons. One is that it causes a lot of fear by people. You know, like
what
I
about
think
45
this is,
that's a training issue.
No, it's not. It's just, this is like you are asking to be able to have a right that can be intimidating to other people. And number two, in the case of your daughter,
you don't ask for a right. You have it. You don't ask for it.
Yeah, you're saying, let me
clear this up,
yeah.
Okay, just with a sentence. We have a sheriff that said, I believe in the Second Amendment. I believe in the right of the Second Amendment, but I will not allow an exposed weapon. Well, how can you allow a right? And why is the Second Amendment the only right that you can allow or not allow, number one? Number two, when it comes to the Second Amendment, are you the standard, or who's the standard on who should carry and who shouldn't, other than the fact if they've broken the law and they're a felon? The third thing is that 35 states have open carry. But you're saying you don't believe in open carry, you think they need to get permission to have it. How can you say you're for a right when you're advocating government oversight to allow something, and in fact, if you're in Congress, you have the right to take away our right by being in Congress? It's a little confusing. How do you put allow and right in the same sentence?
So let's back up for a second, because you're saying I want this to be a right, and I'm acknowledging that you want this to be a right without acknowledging the breadth of the right you want. So I don't mean to be terminologically exact there, but
it already
is
a right. That's what I'm getting at.
It is a
right.
Right.
Cool. So we all agree the Second Amendment, you know, right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Right. Like that's
period.
Excellent. Well, sure, except that the Supreme Court and every constitutional right is a fairly short document that actually has a number of restrictions.
Well, the Supreme Court just changed that in New York. They gave it back
right.
to
them.
Right,
and they said that
okay,
I'm going to have to
interrupt this. We're getting the flag over here. We're overdue for our one break, and then
okay.
we can come right back to this.
We'll
right.
come back.
Okay, we can
yes.
come back, because here's the deal. The deal is that we're being now told that a right is now a privilege. That's what we're being told.
Right.
Anyway, time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Dak Prescott here. Why do I choose proven quality sleep from Sleep Number? Because better sleep elevates my game. Only my Sleep Number 360 smart bed helps me fall asleep faster, keeps me cool, and effortlessly adjusts for my best sleep. That's more focus, more edge, and more highlights. And that means more wins for all of us.
And now save 40% on the Sleep Number 360 Special Edition Smart Bed Queen at $14.99, only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL.
It's time for the Stillwater Powwow at its new location, the Reading Rodeo Grounds, September 30th through October 2nd with free admission. It's the return of beautiful dancers, powerful drummers, and the celebration of our people's culture and history. Proudly brought to you by the Reading Rancheria and the Wind River Resort and Casino. The Stillwater Powwow at its new location, the Reading Rodeo Grounds, September 30th through October 2nd with free admission. For information, call 242-4558 or visit stillwaterpowwow.com. Brought to you by the Potters, this station, and other sponsors.
At Shafter Regional Medical Center, we're specialists in emergency care with the experience and training to deliver expert diagnosis and treatment to all emergency patients. Shafter Regional Medical Center is certified as an advanced primary stroke facility and is one of the nation's 50 top cardiovascular hospitals and is a fully accredited chest pain center. In an emergency, when every minute has meaning and every second counts, choose Shafter Regional Medical Center, your choice for emergency care. Shafter Regional Medical Center, caring for our communities when minutes matter.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
The years rolled slowly past, and I found myself alone. Thought were my friends. Found myself further and further from my home, and I guess I lost my way. There were oh so many roads. I was living to run and running to live. Never worried about paying or even how much I owe.
Rob Seeger. Thank you, Sally Lou. It's like our one and only song with one break. And I think my partner has a question here.
Yeah.
Oh, do we want to wrap up the Second Amendment piece, though?
We're going to have to agree to disagree, because you're not going to convince me of what you were saying. And yeah, obviously I'm not going to convince you on what
I was
saying.
I think that's great. Like, so, we can agree to disagree. Like, so, this is America.
Yeah, but you're running for Congress.
An office. You're running for Congress. And you're asking for my vote.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm asking for every listener's vote.
And we have to ask you permission for a right. So yeah, that's a problem.
So that just tells me all I need to know.
So I'm curious. What has Doug done on the Second Amendment? Right, because
who cares?
He hasn't proposed the single
Doug isn't
law.
In here. We're talking to you.
We're right. talking about you.
We don't but care about Doug. We'll talk to Doug. Interview. He's not going to get
this
off the
This is your interview yeah. time for the job.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is your interview time like, for like the job.
This
so
is
you
an interview
you
where,
tell
you,
us what
where you,
you
know the other guy.
And where you're
right.
going to go. Well, we know the other guy. We know what he's done, and our listeners know that. So we're here to hear you. That's why you're here.
I'm just going to note that I'm the top-rated Democrat on the CRPA, right, that's running for Congress.
Okay.
So like,
now I have a quick question for you. Do you support the separation of the 23 counties in the North State from California to become the state of Jefferson, or whatever we deem to name it?
I think California should really look at splitting up. I'm not sure if those 23 that have signed on, I'm not sure if they all now want to succeed, right? Because
there's no secession.
It is.
I'm sorry.
Separation.
The separation.
Everybody gets
yeah.
that. Everybody.
You're right.
That's
the wrong term.
That's huge. You're going to go for Congress and you're saying secession? No way, Jose.
Well,
it's
yeah.
separation.
Amicable separation.
Separation.
Right? Sacramento would have to approve it, and then the U.S. Congress would have to admit it as a state.
And the governor and the president have nothing to do with it.
And you realize that.
You realize that.
Right. It's Congress.
Article
4,
Section 3.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But, I mean, like, just...
The Virginia model. We're going to do that. And the way things are going now, we're going to have the war, so we'll be able to use that wholeheartedly.
So wait.
And, by the way, having
war is,
hypothetically speaking, and also...
Yeah.
But I think it's very unlikely that we will see, you know, California be, you know, out of the U.S. Congress, right? Like, that's what the Virginia model was, is that Virginia seceded and then West Virginia was
separated. Well, your party leader for California, Governor Newsom, is doing everything he can to make sure that he has the country of California. So he has alluded to that.
There's no Democrat pushing for a country of California. There's no Democrat pushing for a secession or a separation from the United States.
Well, there's a actually.
Yeah,
you didn't see Cal Exit on the. You didn't see Cal Exit. You don't remember Cal Exit.
Cal Exit was a ballot proposition funded by
that was
like a zany millionaire, billionaire, something.
No, it wasn't. No, that you're thinking of Tim Draper, and you're thinking.
I am thinking
state,
of Tim Draper.
Right?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I've got
no,
that switch.
Cal Exit is something that's pretty real. In fact, there is going to be coming out. I believe it's going to be on National Geographic. A whole.
docuseries
yeah. on that. It's coming out, I think, October, I don't know, but sometime soon. And so, so the deal is that yes, California is trying to separate and be their own country. I mean, you know, it's a nation state according to the governor, who would be a person who possibly could be a presidential candidate in your party. Now,
So this documentary says, who are they citing? Like, who are the politicians that they're citing?
We have Gavin Newsom saying that exactly, that we're a nation state. We'll do what we want. He's mm-hmm. violated Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution. Let me land the plane.
Sure.
Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution, because he made an agreement with another state, stay with Brown's agreement with another state, which is Oregon, on the Klamath Dams. That is a violation against the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Section 10, Clause 4. Okay, and what it is, it speaks of the fact that you cannot make an agreement with a foreign country or any treaty with a foreign country or another state. Without permission of Congress. He did it anyway. He made a deal with China. He did it anyway.
Did it with Oregon? Did it with Washington?
Of Washington? That's the deal. So my thing isn't that when I look at you as a candidate, I don't look at you as someone as a candidate who is, you know, nothing but a good man. But what I do see is that the position of larger and larger government has never done anything to help us, number one. And number two, you are with a party that you're totally fine with. Not that I'm crazy about the Republican Party. I'm not crazy about either one of them. But you're engaged in a party that wants to not only move away from the Constitution of the United States, which protects us all, but also is willing to do illegal things against the Constitution. And thirdly, is also willing to be in violation of breaking the law. Immigration.
I'm going to make a couple of things really clear. One, I'm not a favor of Gavin Newsom, and I do not like the direction of the state Democratic Party. And I am a Democrat because I believe in a strong federal government, and I think it does good for people. So we're going to disagree there, right? But I look at everything in the state that I like, and there are the dam in Shasta, the dam at Whiskeytown. Those were Democratic projects. Our timber industry was strong when this district voted for Democrats. You know, we need strong federal intervention because we are a rural district, and rural districts cost money. We are the takers and not the makers, right? And that's fine because I think there's a lot of cultural value to having these rural districts be strong and vibrant communities. But that's why I'm a Democrat. And it's not because of these, like, big city pronouncements. And I don't really know, you know, what Gavin Newsom is doing with Oregon or with China. The China thing, you know, like, I remember seeing it, and it's like, you know, it's basically like, oh my God, it's the worst kind of diplomacy because it's fake diplomacy. It's just like, oh, we're going to sign an agreement to do more stuff. But there's no commitment. There's no nothing, right? Otherwise, he would have been charged.
So you'd vote for Donald Trump over Gavin Newsom then?
Oh my God, no. I don't know what I would do in that situation. I'm definitely not voting for Donald Trump, though. So I'd probably vote for Newsom, right?
Because okay. So
I really dislike Donald
Trump.
I'm
trying to get a center of gravity.
Yeah. So my center of gravity is that I don't like Donald Trump. I hate Donald Trump. And I really strongly dislike Gavin Newsom. Would I vote for... Man, Liz Cheney over Donald Trump? Absolutely. Would I vote for Liz Cheney over Gavin Newsom? Probably. You know, so if that's the center of gravity, is who
well,
I would
she is
vote
a Democrat.
For president. She's not. She's very Republican. I mean, she voted.
No, she's not very Republican. She is a rhino, 110%.
She's a very conservative person who cares about America and thinks that Trump was a criminal.
She cares about Liz Cheney, is what
I
she
think
cares
Donald
about.
Trump
and
cares
she cares about her
Trump.
Daddy's legacy, which she's trying to protect and keep under wraps. So just keep that in mind. All of that she's trying to keep under wraps. She is scrambling. That's why she's in Wyoming where there's, you know, 25 people.
Well, 500,000. But, yeah, I agree. And she lost her primary, you know. So, obviously, the Republican Party has...
By her actions.
Yeah,
so
because,
that
you know,
you
political courage has consequences.
Well,
absolutely.
So she makes a better Democrat than she does a Republican. If that's what you're saying.
I don't.
If that's what you like, then she is more of
a
Democrat.
Because Liz Cheney and I disagree on a lot of policies. I respect her a lot as a person. I think she's got a really strong... like, you know, character, but on policies, like, we would disagree completely on abortion, for example. So, like, there's a lot of areas on which Liz Cheney and I would strongly disagree. And
so you support
few.
Abortion, then? That's what you're saying?
Absolutely. I mean, we talked earlier about
Roe
v. Wade.
So you support that my taxpayer money, now this is handed out from the government.
Your taxpayer money
is not currently paid for
abortion.
I'm happy to let you finish, if you let me finish. If, in fact... that the federal government is telling me I have to pay taxes in something that that religiously I don't believe is right, morally I don't believe is right, and if somebody wants to get an abortion, that's up to them. I don't want to pay for it. And why should I have to pay for it? If it's a choice, does that mean if I have a choice of cars, the government should tax everybody to get so I can get that car I want? So my point is that it isn't a matter of whether or not this is something that someone should do or not do, even though I have my stand, you have your stand, but why should I have to pay for it? You know, why should I have to pay for that?
Terry, oh, are we done? Sorry. And the real answer is because people pay taxes and they don't get to pick where they go. We make Quakers pay taxes for the military. We make environmentalists pay taxes to build dams. And we are going to make, you know, religiously conservative people pay taxes to, you know, fund health care that they're personally opposed
it's
to.
It's not funding health care.
It is, absolutely.
No, it's not funding health care. It's funding something for someone who has made a choice to do something because their first choice wasn't a correct choice, or maybe they were raped, but that's very rare. But the whole point is that that's what you're, it's not, it's not.
So would you support taxpayer funding only for rape?
I wouldn't support taxpayer funding for anything.
And that's because you have a moral objection to it.
No, that's because I believe that if in fact someone makes a choice to do something, they also can make another choice. There are people who would help them. I'm sure there's churches that would help them. There are people in society that would help them. There'd be a lot of people to help them. I don't think that the government has, and there is no right the government has, to say, you need to pay for this because this person did this or this person had this happen. You need to pay for this. I don't think that, that they have the right. They, and they don't constitutionally. And my issue is you believe that big government is better. I believe big government is worse. Nothing good has happened since Biden's gotten in. There isn't one thing that's happened other than the fact that we economically are on the brink of collapsing. Number one.
Good thing so you kind show. Of like, but you touched on a lot of issues. Oh, sorry, Wynn. I'll let you.
Go ahead.
So you touched on a lot of issues. And one is that, like, you think that there are, you know, consequences to choices. But what about rape? There's no consequence there. There's no choice there.
What about someone
who's like, hey, like, their child is not viable. Their child is going to die if they give birth, and giving birth will impact their ability to have future children. Like, I have a friend who has one kid.
Why should the government have to pay for that?
Well, the government doesn't pay for abortion now. The government doesn't pay for abortion now, but I'm just trying to tell you that there are a lot of people in America that pay taxes to pay for things that they don't like. There are anti-war protesters that have to pay for the military because we as a nation have decided that a strong military is important. And while I wouldn't be pushing for federal funding for abortion or federal subsidies for abortion, I absolutely will defend the ability of the federal government to tax people and use that tax money for something that those people don't want
Which
to spend
would be
money
abortion.
On. Well, no, but this is the military. Well, this is dams. This is infrastructure. Someone in L.A. wants to pay for road maintenance in Modoc County? No, but it doesn't matter because we're a government. And governments collect money from the public.
That's a state issue. Well, roads are a state issue.
Yeah, but yeah. Interstates, you know, whatever. I'm just saying, like, in general, governments spend money on things. You don't get to fill out on your IRS form where your money's going.
Okay, so how about this? Let's switch gears a little bit. And if elected, specifically, what would you do to protect our pre-1914 water rights?
I think water rights are the basis of U.S. water water policy. Although I will say that most water rights are a state issue, so I don't want to get in trouble with Terry. But federally, the best thing the federal government can do for water is increase supply. And that means putting money into sites, finally seeing it built, hopefully.
Well, that's separate. I'm talking about our water rights.
Right. So water rights, they're state. Like, state law is the one that governs water rights within California. The only federal – there's the Colorado River Compact, which is semi-federal, but that's kind of like a federal blessed agreement between a bunch of different states.
Mm-hmm.
But anyone in the North state that's drawing water, that is a state right.
Okay, so then a bureaucrat in D.C. put their thumb down on local water users here.
Oh, you're talking preemption, yeah, because of the Endangered Species Act. Yeah.
No. Hear me out. They have put their hammer down on the ACID Canal district, Anderson Cottonwood Irrigation District, being able to use the water that they have water rights from pre-1914. So that was before Shasta Dam was put in place. and the water was drawn out of that river, out of the Sacramento River, and all the other tributaries that fed it, the Pitt River, Squaw, you name it, all the other creeks and rivers that fed it, but they had the water rights and still do. These people own these water rights to this day. They still own them, and they are not allowed to have water for this whole summer. And they are having some serious issues. We have wells drying up. We have aquifers drying up.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have plants drying, dying, trees. We have.
So I'm well aware of the ACID. They got a 19% allocation. They decided to sell it rather than use it.
No. See, that's the thing. You're not aware. You're hearing certain things and not getting all the information on what happened. And in the next hour, there's going to be somebody here who's going to be talking about exactly that. They're going to talk about what's been going on. But my question to you is, how would you, as a, congressman, be able to help the local constituency here to get their water rights back because a bureaucrat in D.C. decided to pencil whip it and say that they could not have it?
So, to be clear, that water right allocation was set by California Department of Water Resources. Mm-hmm. And so the bureaucrat pencil whipping it was in Sacramento.
No, it was in D.C. They tracked it down. D.C. person did it. Yes.
I really don't understand how that could be the case, and maybe I'm incorrect, but this is a, like, Department of Water Resources, Cal Department of Water Resources, the state-level agency, is determining, like, where the water has to go because they need to maintain minimum flows in the river for fish. And we can absolutely look at that as, like, hey, is this something that's appropriate? Do I think we let way too much water go in November and December? Absolutely. But
year-round. Yeah.
But ACID, and I don't know, did they not get a 19% allocation? Because I've talked to people in ACID, and that is what I got. They got a 19% allocation. They couldn't fill their, they couldn't charge the canal with that amount of water, so they sold it.
Because they couldn't even get the water to go up that high to drop into the canal with that percentage. So, and even if they did get that water in the canal, it would only go from where the water is dropped in the river.
So they made
from the river
a decision
to over here by Crown Motors. That's as far as the water would go because it would just be leaching into the dirt canal. It would leach into it because it's not a concrete canal. It would leach into the canal, and that's as far as it would go. So they did not get their water. And so the district had to do what they had to do. They had to sell it to get something out from under it because they knew that that was not going to happen. They knew that. They know the science of it. They know the practical part of it is how they execute getting
the
water.
Right, and maybe that sale is through Bureau of Reclamation, which would be in D.C., but definitely the decision on the water flow, like, that's a California Environmental Resources thing. Like, Cal Water Rights, those water rights are not federal water rights, right? The federal government, like, kind of bought those water rights out when it built the dam. And it said, we're not going to impact your state water right. You know, please let us build this dam. Please support building Shasta Dam.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how that works. Like, it's the California Constitution, right? California Constitution, the state owns the water, but people have rights to the water for beneficial use.
Okay. All right. And then you were talking about Sites Reservoir getting done. The money's been there. The money has been funded. It's been sitting in a coffer somewhere or spent. Already spent, and I would argue it probably been spent already by criminals at the state level. So what would you do as a congressman to help get that executed and get it done like ASAP? Because nobody's doing it.
Yeah, I mean, the real holdup right now on sites is the state because the federal government has allocated 25%. I would be happy with allocating 50% or 75%. I think the federal government should be building sites or should be at least charging a lot more money in. But Bureau's made the 25% allocation. What you need, to go back to the first part of this call, is someone who can build bridges in Sacramento to see this kind of a joint project move forward. And I'm far better placed to do that than Doug LaMalfa.
Okay, so what experience do you have politically? Where have you served other than doing Congress that you're shooting for now?
So this is about diplomacy. So I don't have a prior political background. Okay. I think it's really important for people to come in to politics and then get out when they're done.
Good.
And I think that you should be in there for a short period of time and take your life's experience to there, get something done for the community, and then leave.
Okay.
And that's what I want to do. But you will take this is a diplomatic problem, right, with sites, because we have factions of the California Democratic Party that are completely opposed to sites. We have other factions, you know, like the Jerry Brown faction that was much more friendly to sites.
Yeah, it was right next to his property.
Yeah, exactly. He's in Calusa.
In the same county, yeah.
But, you know, like, I think it's really important to understand that this is something where you need to be able to build those kind of interstate bridges. And this isn't you don't realize the job you're running for. It's like, I do realize the job I'm running for. And the job I'm running for is U.S. House of Representatives, which includes some laws, but a lot of getting stuff implemented in California means being able to work with people in California.
Well, yeah, and that totally makes sense. but that really isn't what we were saying.
We weren't
saying that building bridges wasn't a good idea. We were just saying that you didn't have jurisdiction, and building those bridges would basically be something that would be whether they trust you or you trust them.
Exactly.
Sykes Reservoir started in 1955.
Right.
So it's almost been 100 years.
So my grandfather.
It's a political football used by both parties, just like abortion.
I have another quick question. We need to get this one asked too. What do you think should be done along the Mexican-California border?
We already have a wall for most of that distance. You can have some enforcement. The real key to stopping illegal immigration is enforcing immigration here at home, right? So you need to be able to deport people that are here illegally. I'm against sanctuary cities. I'm against sanctuary farms. My opponent, Doug LaMalfa, is co-sponsoring an amnesty bill. That is exactly the wrong approach. We tried it in the 80s under Reagan. It did not solve immigration.
What is the approach?
The approach is to be really firm in the application of law, right? If you are here illegally, you will be returning to your country of origin. And then the second approach is that we really need to reform asylum, because asylum has greatly expanded to not just mean my state is persecuting me, but in 2012 it expanded to mean gang violence and domestic violence, and that's why we've seen this, a million asylum.
But the Democrats are in the process of changing that. So you're
well, no,
I
that's
agree
the
with,
asylum
I
law
agree
right
with
there.
You. I agree with
I think
you.
The Democrats are wrong in immigration. Like, I'm going to be full stop. But there are a lot of Republicans, too, who like to go to the border and take a photo op, and then they go back and they employ illegal immigrants. Like, Butte County runs a public housing thing for illegal immigrants. Like, if you're curious, like, oh, hey, like, are my tax dollars going to support illegal immigrants? Like, look at Republican counties, because they're the ones using it. And I think there's a lot of hypocrisy. I went to the Farm Bureau, and they asked me that same question, and I said the answer is actually going to be deporting people that are here illegally, and all of a sudden their faces went white, and they said, well, no, I need my cheap workers. I won't be able to make the money. And that's wrong.
So what you're saying is that illegals are here in Butte County, and they are being housed.
Well, they're throughout the North State. But in Buchanan.
Well, you said Buchanan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so
I live in Buchanan, so I know it specifically.
Okay. So what you're saying is that there's housing, governmental.
Public housing.
That's funded for the specific use of harboring illegal aliens so they can work. Okay.
I have sheriffs that have come and complained to me that I can't ask for
that's
someone's immigration
crime.
Stamp.
That's a federal crime. It's Title 8, Code Section 1324. Of the United States Code, that harboring and shielding an illegal alien is punishable up to 10 years in prison. So how come somebody hasn't...
I'm pretty sure they're not in violation of the law, because they're just refusing... Because California doesn't make you ask for an application, right? But you can tell that everyone there isn't there legally.
Well,
right? And every sheriff knows that people there aren't there legally. And this is what's wrong, right? It's hypocritical to complain about a border...
No. Because, see, the jurisdiction of the border is federal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know,
within 100 miles of the border.
Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4. Okay, that's where it is. The naturalization the states gave the federal government to handle immigration. Okay, so that's where your jurisdiction is. But if this money is being used to harbor and shield an illegal alien that's here, that's a felony. Title 8, Code Section 1324, so the sheriff's
Gary,
right.
I'm not a lawyer. I would be shocked if any DA prosecuted that, and I'm not even sure if it's
DA
a violation of law.
DA can't prosecute. It's got to be the Attorney General. It's federal.
Sure. I mean, the point is that there's a lot of public sector money that goes to illegal immigrants, and I'm sure there's a lot of public housing.
Well, that means something you could change, is what I'm saying. You could change that to where that money doesn't go there.
I think it's more important to make sure that those illegal immigrants don't stay here. Right, because you don't want to be cutting off illegal immigrants for access to schools if they're 8 years old. I mean, is that included? Because I'm very against that. Right, there's a lot of public spending that you do spend on illegal immigrants. My problem is not the spending; it's that they're allowed to remain, and that we have these hypocrites on the Republican Party that are whipping people up around the border, even as they're employing illegal immigrants in their own, businesses.
Okay, I have another question. What about the I guess the best way to put it, let's double check, make sure I wrote it right.
We got 2 minutes, brother.
Yeah, I know. Okay. The expansion of the IRS.
I think it's good. Yeah. I mean, 87,000 new employees.
Armed.
Not all agents. No, they're not all armed. But no, this is only going to affect you if you're cheating on your taxes. I don't cheat on my taxes. I know that a lot of people do. I think it's good. You want to have strong enforcement. Critiquing the IRS is like critiquing a city for hiring more cops.
So they can come to your, knock on your door and be armed and do whatever they want to do. They're essentially being deputized. And so you agree.
IRS already has some agents, and some of those new 87,000 people will be agents. But the focus on the IRS is to enforce tax code compliance. And if you're If you are currently in compliance with your taxes, you have absolutely nothing to fear from increasing the IRS. It's kind of like if you're complaining about your city hiring more cops. This doesn't make any sense unless you're a criminal.
And they would never railroad you. Ever.
Well, I mean, honestly, trust them. Okay. Anyway, I understand you don't like the IRS, okay. But I'm just, yeah, all of them. I'm fine with it, right?
Right? Yeah, right. Okay, so the thing is if people want to get a hold of you, Max, how can they do that? What's your website, and how can they find out more about it?
Right, so I've got a website, maxsteinerforcongress.com. I've got a lot of issues there. You know, water, forestry are the big ones, but there's some national level stuff as well. You know, info@maxsteinerforcongress.com is kind of like the public email address. Happy to respond. You know, because I check it myself, because this is a fairly low-budget campaign. So, yeah, if people want to reach out, that's the best way to do it. I'm on social media. You know, feel free to drop into Facebook, drop into Twitter. I will say I get so many comments that I don't hit everything, so the email, if you want absolutely a response, that's the best one. But, you know, check it out. I'm on social. I'm on the Internet, and my policies are there. So I'd love to get your vote in November.
Great. We've had Max Steiner on, and thank you, Max.